Hello, welcome to the Handgun World Podcast. Why do I carry a gun? Because I can't carry a cop. My name is Bob Main. It is Monday, August 17th, and you are tuning in to the Handgun World Podcast, Episode 3. Appreciate you listening and giving me a chance to talk about one of my very favorite subjects, and that is firearms, the ownership of them, and the shooting of them. Today's subject matter is going to be two basic subjects. We're going to talk about the fact that there's more to it than just concealment. When you get your concealed carry license, there's more to it than just concealing a handgun. And there's a special author that has given me the opportunity to share some of this information with you. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some of that. We're going to talk about magazine capacity also, which is somewhat of a controversial subject. But magazine capacity is something that I'm a big fan of, and we're going to talk a little bit about that and how that plays into it. So again, thank you for tuning into the Handgun World Podcast, Episode 3. So let's talk a little bit about, first of all, concealment. A lot of new concealed carry holders these days, with the political climate out there and people worried about the economy and, you know, people just trying to survive. So you've taken your concealed carry course, you got your license, you know, you sent your money in to the issuing agency, you waited the time, you got the background check, and now you're a proud owner of a license to carry a concealed handgun. In my humble opinion, that's terrific. The more gun owners we can create, the more concealed carry owners, concealed carry license holders we can create, in my opinion, the harder it's going to be for those rights to be taken away from us. If your gun is a piece of property that you own, chances are, I think you're going to say, hey, wait a minute, you know, government, I don't want you taking this away from me. This is something that I worked hard for and I paid for. So again, I think the more gun owners we have, the better chance we're going to have to keep those rights. Now, hopefully you have factored in some training. And that's what I want to talk to you about. Very important to get training. Now that you've got your concealed carry license, well, now what are you going to do? What are you going to do if you are attacked? What are you going to do if somebody does try to harm you and you have to use that gun? Can you shoot it well under stress? Can you shoot it on the move? Can you shoot at a moving target and hit what you're shooting at? Very important to realize that, you know, if you're in a situation where you have to use a gun to defend yourself, you're going to be under a tremendous amount of stress. I've taken a course by the man who has given me this information here to share with you, a man named Glenn Matthews. Glenn Matthews is an instructor for Suarez International. I took his defensive pistol class a couple of years ago. And if you get a chance, go to the web and go to Suarez, S-U-A-R-E-Z, Suarez International. Gabe Suarez is the founder of the company. Gabe's a very well thought of gunfighting instructor, and Glenn Matthews is very good as well. In Tyler, Texas, I took his course, Defensive Pistol, so you can see that on the website as well. So, like I said, you know, they're going to teach you, when you take training like that, how to shoot under stress, and I'm a big, big proponent of that. Also, wouldn't hurt, if you get a chance, look up in your local area, see if there are some IDPA, International Defensive Pistol Association, matches in your area. They're free. You don't have to be a member. They're not free. They normally charge somewhere around $15 to $20 to participate, but it's excellent, not combat training, but it's excellent practice on safely drawing your weapon and safely shooting your weapon and what to do. And it also gives you some action shooting practice, and it also gives you some practice at shooting moving targets when you're under stress. So again, it's not complete combat training, but check out IDPA. You can go to IDPA.com. Also, another organization called IPSC, I-P-S-C. I think that stands for International Pistol Shooters Confederation. Both of those have very good matches, and I would very strongly suggest that you take those. So, you know, you're legal, but are you trained? Let's talk about the laws that vary from state to state. And the laws that I specifically want to talk about, first of all, is what does concealment mean? Every state seems to have their own take on that, but pretty much in a general rule, most of the states feel that you should carry your concealed weapon in a manner where a reasonable person cannot discern that you are carrying a firearm. Again, you know, whether a reasonable person can or cannot discern whether you're carrying a firearm, you do not want them to be able to notice that you're carrying one. Some states allow for open carry. Now, open carry, I'm going to inject a little bit of opinion here. I got a friend of mine that thinks that open carry is a pretty good idea. I don't like it. I don't want the bad guy to blast me from across the street because he sees me as a deterrent to him being able to do his evil deeds. I'm not a big fan of open carry. It kind of telegraphs, and I used to be a big proponent of open carry. Open carry, what I thought was something that that I thought that we needed to have. You know, and for those of you who may not know, open carry means there are some states, Arizona is one of them, I think Montana is another, Wyoming possibly, I'd have to check that, where you're allowed to carry your firearm on you, and it can be in a holster, but it has to be exposed. So it's the opposite. It's not concealed. You know, think about that. I used to be a fan of that. I'm changing my ways on that. So I think it's, if you conceal properly, I think that element of surprise that you are armed actually works to your advantage. You know, we're all familiar with the photojournalist vest and the fanny waist pack. You know, they provide concealment as required by law. If you got a vest, or you have a fanny pack on, by law, that is concealed. But I kind of think that they scream gun to people who are halfway knowledgeable. They scream, hey, this person's got a gun. This is a fanny pack with a gun on it. Again, you don't want to wear clothes, in my opinion, that telegraph the fact that you've got a firearm. In today's environment, we have to go beyond concealment. There are folks out there who have been trained to look for people who are carrying a gun, and they're taught to shoot them first. With the potential for terrorism looming even larger, and make no mistake about it, folks, you know, we still have a pretty good chance of more terrorism occurring. You know, that's being forgotten about in America, and that frustrates me. All the talk about the economy and all the talk about health care debate and the bailouts and the deficits and everything, all these domestic issues, that those are important as well. Those can destroy this company as much as a terrorist attack. But folks, we cannot ignore terrorism anymore. Ignoring it in the past is what got us attacked. So I'm kind of worried about that. The potential is still out there. Active shooters running amok in the malls of America. We got people running around the malls. We got people running around in schools. Crazy people in general. Going around taking pot shots in churches and everywhere. They're taking pot shots at the citizenry. So I believe the time has come to be covert. And again, I'm going to share more of Glenn's information here with you. Glenn Matthews defines covert means that you do not want to telegraph the idea that you're carrying a concealed weapon. You want to look like the average Joe on the street, just going about his business as usual. That means that 5.11 combat commando pants, shorts, and shirts, they stay in the closet. They stay in the closet for when you're going to take a training course, like one of Glenn's, or whether you're going to the range for practice. The same goes for your gun shirts and caps. I got plenty of caps that say Smith & Wesson and that say Glock and Shooters Club and IDPA Shooters Organization and all that. I got a lot of caps that say those. I wear them at the range. I don't wear them when I'm carrying my pistol. Leave those at home until you want to brag about your favorite firearms manufacturer or holster manufacturer in a safe venue like a shooting range. And while we're on the subject of tattletale clothing, think about your feet, your footwear. You go strolling around the mall in your combat boots, that's not a good idea either. A good solid pair of work boots or running shoes, they might be good fighting platforms. But for me, In the summertime, I like wearing flip-flops, tennis shoes. I like to make myself look like I am not ready for combat. They're not a good fighting platform like work boots, running shoes. But flip-flops, sandals, you know, they take that aura away that you're carrying a firearm or that you're ready for combat. So, you know, think about that. The chances are, you know, don't forget, in my opinion, don't forget about the rule of 3-3-3. Most of the time, if it's a single attacker, the rule of 3-3-3 goes like this. Most of the time, an altercation is going to be over in less than 3 shots, and within 3 yards, and within 3 seconds. Now, when we talk about magazine capacity, I'm going to go ahead and present the other side of that argument. But most of the time, don't forget about the 3-3-3. Now, let's talk about these Hawaiian-style shirts. You know, they've made it back into the fashion scene, and I think that's a good thing. There's a lot you can conceal under a Hawaiian-style shirt. You can conceal a full-size pistol. You can conceal a knife. You can conceal a small flashlight. It's amazing what you can hide under those Hawaiian or camp shirts. And they make for a real good low profile. If you carry your gun behind the hip, you can sometimes walk around with the top of that shirt unbuttoned, and just to be sure, it's just make sure that if you're walking around with that shirt unbuttoned, that it's not a windy day. And it's going to blow the shirt up, and people are going to be able to see your gun. Yeah, but remember, the idea is still concealment and being covert. When you're choosing pants for concealed carry, jeans are a good choice, especially if you have the relaxed fit jeans. Now, I like to wear a lot of cargo shorts, especially in the summertime. I live in Texas. It's very hot. I like to wear a lot of cargo shorts. I can conceal pretty well. If I have a Hawaiian-style shirt on and I've got cargo shorts, you'd be amazed. Especially if I'm pocket carrying, you're never going to know that pistol is in my pocket. So, you know, and I've got room. If I get into a fight with relaxed fit jeans or some relaxed fitting cargo shorts, I got room to fight. The whole idea is to be low profile. Don't draw attention to yourself. Be the gray man. If the time should come that you happen into a situation that you can't possibly avoid, you don't want to telegraph to the bad guys, "I'm carrying a gun." Let it be a surprise to them. And again, this first part of this Handgun World podcast on being concealed and being covert, this was some good information that was given to me by Glenn Matthews from Suarez International. And in today's show notes, I'm going to put a little link there. So you'll be able to look up Suarez International and see a listing of their classes. So go back to the website, handgunworld.com, and check the show notes. So now that we've talked a little bit about concealed carry and being covert, let's shift gears. Let me present the other side of the argument. I like to be fair and balanced, so, you know, let's talk about magazine capacity. It's a highly controversial issue, and the subject I want to talk about is whether high magazine capacity gives you a tactical advantage, or are we better served by carrying an equal-sized weapon with smaller capacity and larger bullets? Point one, here's what I want to mention on that. Pistol bullets, regardless of their caliber, are iffy. Okay? None can be guaranteed to drop an adversary in their tracks reliably. The notion of a one-shot stop is really, folks, it's an urban myth. And I know I'm going to get some people out there, they're going to be emailing me, "Oh, my 45 will drop somebody in the tracks anytime." There's plenty of evidence against that as well. I think it was my first episode. I did some information there about what we call the caliber wars. Which caliber is better? Really, you know, pistol bullets, pistols in general, they're not typically one-shot fight stoppers. If you want a one-shot fight stopper, get a shotgun or a rifle out. But you can't always have a shotgun or a rifle, and you can't always conceal them very well. So, again, regardless of the caliber, don't believe a lot of these urban myths that pistol bullets are these magical death rays, because, you know, they're not. And for the record, the only shot drop, excluding headshots, that typically happen are SWAT teams that enter crack houses. And, you know, you got to talk about, some of these guys are very, very good shots. And they practice, and they practice, and they practice. And by the way, many of them use 9mm plus P and 40 caliber plus P. But if we look at the three most prevalent calibers, yeah, you got to remember, and I covered this in episode one, there's really very little difference. A 9mm is about the same size as a 38 357. 10mm is about the same size as a 40 caliber, and an 11mm is about the same size as a 45. So you got about 1mm difference between those. And you know, there's only so much velocity that you can drive a pistol bullet with before you start affecting its integrity. There are limits to what you can shoot out of a pistol. And every one of these calibers has failed at some point in time. A good book to read is Fairburn's Shoot to Live. He writes of two separate times when the 45 failed to work better than anything else. So Google Shoot to Live by an author named Fairburn. And a lot of trauma injury doctors and reputable terminal ballistics experts also agree that, you know, a pistol bullet's a pistol bullet's a pistol bullet, pretty much. That's my opinion. That's my take on that. Point two that I want to make. Private citizen concealed carry operators should not go looking for trouble. If you're called to a fight, it's either because people have inadvertently crossed paths with you while they're trying to do some bad stuff, or you've been specifically targeted, like a carjacking or a home invasion. Now, in this situation, you're probably going to be attacked by surprise. So here's where magazine capacity, I think, comes into place. When you translate the conversion of fright and startle into the firearm application, we see that the definition is probably going to be a high volume of fire. You're going to shoot a lot until the threat is removed. Now, especially if you've got multiple attackers. So here's the other side of the 3-3-3 argument. And this is where I feel pretty comfortable carrying my Glock 19 with 15 rounds plus one in the chamber, 16 rounds of 9mm plus P. My favorite carry round in 9mm is Corban DPX. Corban DPX, DPX stands for deep penetrating. The X, I think, stands for extra power or something like that. You ought to take a look at it. It's a copper bullet. And next time you get a chance to look at some ammo, look at Corban DPX. Ask if they carry it. Just take a look at the bullet. You'll see a big, deep, hollow cavity in the hollow point. It's supposed to be very deep penetrating and expand very well. One of the things I like about Corban DPX is that it also doesn't recoil all that much compared to most plus P rounds. And if you look at the ballistics, it's powerful enough. But a high volume of fire, I've got 16 rounds. So I think the only time I'm going to need more than 16 rounds is if I got more than 16 people. That was a joke. All right. But, you know, when you're frightened like that, and when you're startled, and if you've got multiple attackers, your tendency under stress is going to be to shoot a lot until the threat is no longer there. Okay, the common thread that's often seen here is multiple adversaries. The lone criminal or terrorist is kind of an urban myth nowadays. More often than not, you're going to be outnumbered. Now, I think it's very plausible you could be in a situation where if you've got multiple attackers, it still may be over in 3 or 4 seconds. After this, either you're going to be seriously injured or dead, hope not, or your adversaries are going to be seriously injured or dead. Urban gunfights don't go on for hours and hours and hours. They're usually unexpected, short in duration, high intensity, extreme violence, and multiple adversaries. That's typically the backdrop. But again, they happen very, very quickly. So one thing that you want to remember about carrying a gun is carrying a gun should not always be comfortable, but it should be comforting. Let me repeat that. It may not always be comfortable, but it should be comforting. Does it make you feel safer? Eventually, you will learn to carry a gun in a comfortable way. So selecting a small weapon might not always be the better choice. Now, if you can't carry anything else, if you have no choice, you know, I have a little pocket size 380, and my pocket size 380 is better than not carrying anything at all. It's better than going unarmed. I like to carry my Glock 19 as much as possible, but sometimes that's just not practical. So the 380 in the pocket is better than the Glock left at home. Let's just put it that way. You have to ask yourself, how shootable is that gun for you? You know, how shootable is the gun for you, especially when you're looking at a smaller weapon. Now, the third issue that I want to talk about is availability. We're starting to get into the hurricane season in some parts of the country, and everybody still has the memory of Katrina, especially the people who live in the Southwest. Natural disasters and riots can occur at any time. We're assuming that you're going to have your concealed carry pistol as your first line of defense until you can obtain something else. And there's an old saying, what's the purpose of a pistol? The purpose of the pistol is to get you to your rifle or to get you to your shotgun. Now, in an ideal situation, that's true. And it could be true. But typically, your first line of defense is going to be your concealed carry weapon. I mean, that's typically what you're going to have available to you. So that's why I'm a big fan of large capacity magazines, because if that's going to be your first available defense and maybe your only available defense, again, it's comforting for me to have 16 rounds of 9mm plus P Corban DPX in that pistol versus somebody else that may only have 7 or 8 rounds in their gun, especially if there's multiple attackers. So don't forget about availability. The fourth issue I want to talk about is effects on target. This is where all the bullet salesmen come out of the woodwork and they discuss their terminal ballistics. You know, folks, come on. Hundreds of thousands of people, both good guys and bad guys, have been killed with pistol shots in the last few decades. And you know what the majority of them have been, unfortunately, shot with? 9mm. 9mm. Why? Because it's probably the most available and prevalent and most widely carried pistol caliber in the world. Plenty of people have been shot by a .22 also, folks. Not that it's ideal, don't get me wrong. But anybody that thinks that 9mm is a weak, an anemic round, go tell the people who were shot by 9mm. So how on earth do we get past the fact that 9mm is an anemic round and it's going to bounce off of someone with a leather jacket? Truth be told, you shoot the bad guys until they either fall down or they run away. If you've got a pistol that has 13, 14, 15, 16 rounds, you've got a better chance, in my humble opinion, of shooting until you stop them from doing what they are trying to do. But again, I'm going to tell you, no single caliber is the best choice for everyone. I mean, there are some people that have physical limitations that are better served with a .22. Let's always remember rule number one in a gunfight: have a gun. After you get by rule number one, which is having a gun, have the largest weapon with the largest capacity that you can, number one, comfortably shoot, and number two, comfortably carry. But first, it's got to be comforting. All calibers can fail and have failed. And when you look at issues scientifically, a 9mm or a 38 Special, approximately the same size. So, you know, let's get these big T-Rex stoppers out of our mind. They just simply don't exist. Let me put it into a little bit of a different perspective. There was a cop who worked for a narcotics unit in the South, and he told a story that he and a couple of his partners had gotten into a gunfight with a violent drug dealer. And they shot the bad guy once with a shotgun loaded with tactical slugs. Slugs are about 72 caliber, folks. The shotgun slug entered the right side of the bad guy's chest at about the 2 o'clock position and it exited out through the back at about the 8 o'clock position. Nice shot, right? The bad guy kept fighting. Stole a car, and he evaded the police officers into a wooded area. A week later, the bad guy's attorney arranged for him to turn himself in. He was alive and well. Injured? Yes. Alive and well. So think about that story. Anybody want to tell me now how deadly their pistol round is? Let me tell you another story about a police officer in South America. A high-risk police officer. And he'd been in over about 36 gunfights, verified gunfights. His weapon of choice? A Glock 17 9mm. And when he was asked, why does he carry a Glock 17, he reminded the person asking him that where he was in South America, hollow points were illegal at that time. So he wanted to carry a weapon that would hold as many Full Metal Jacket rounds as he could possibly stick into that magazine. When he was told that there was a belief in the United States that 9mm was an anemic round, he kind of shrugged his shoulders and he said, well, my adversaries must not have gotten that word. He said he fired a burst at the chest, and if they didn't fall fast enough, he fired a burst at the face. He never needed to reload, and he had enough on board so if he missed a shot or two, he could catch up in the fight. You know, perhaps we need to take a lesson from this guy's thinking. Okay, in closing, a couple of things that I want to talk about is, let's talk about the fact that defenders, when you go into a pistol class and you're training, you're going to be trained that defenders, if you are a defender, you're going to fire your weapon until the threat disappears. That means that until the role player falls down or runs away, basically you need to keep on firing. Now, of course, you know, you're simulating. You're not actually, obviously, folks, shooting at each other for real in training. Airsoft pistols and things are used a lot and lots of protection. But think about it. If you're firing until the threat goes away, so will the bad guy. He's going to keep firing too. And that's where magazine capacity really comes into play. And the notion of speed reloading, well, you know, I can carry one or two extra magazines with me and I can reload real quick. You know what? Under stress, that argument just usually doesn't hold up. A lot of fumbling around takes place when you're under stress and people are shooting at you. I mean, I don't know if you ever had that experience before. Some of you listening to this may have had the experience of people shooting at you. Thank God I have not. And I hope I never have to go and experience that. I hope I'm never in that situation. But even in shooting IDPA and even taking a course like defensive pistol at Suarez International puts you under some stress, and you'd be amazed the things that you forget. That's why, and I know I might take some heat out from this comment I'm going to make, and I know I might get some nasty emails or comments, but I don't like guns for defensive purposes that have a manual safety. Because that's just something else that I might forget to do when I'm under stress. Another thing I want to talk about is point shooting. A lot of point shooting is taught in pistol classes. Point shooting is great. I want to take a class just dedicated on point shooting from Suarez International. It's a proven fact that in most altercations, in most defense situations, most of the law enforcement officers or private citizens who have been involved in defending themselves report later they don't even remember seeing the sights of their pistol. They don't remember seeing the sights of their pistol. You need to practice hitting what you're shooting at just simply by pointing your gun and pulling the trigger and putting the round on target. The point to remember is that in a fight, you're going to have what's called bullet deficit disorder. Think about that. Bullet deficit disorder. most of what you learned, most of what you practice is going to go right out the window. You're only going to be about a half or a third of as good as you are in practice. So if you're good in practice, cut that in half or shrink it down to about a third. That's about how good you're going to be under a lot of stress. Think about this truth of being in a gunfight. Having more ammo immediately on board lessens the likelihood of ever needing to reload. Not needing to reload translates into more time delivering lead on target. More trigger time increases the likelihood of hitting your target and increases survivability. So the question is really this. Given that there's a limit to the size of a pistol most people can carry, do you want a pistol that holds more rounds? In my opinion, yes. Yes, you definitely, if given the choice, you want a pistol that's going to hold the most rounds that you can jam in there. Select a caliber that's easily obtained and shootable. And finally, train, and retrain to hit and keep hitting until the threat has gone away. A hit with a 9mm or a 38 is far better than a marginal hit or a complete miss with a caliber that you can't control. And I want to wrap this Handgun World podcast up by also talking a little bit about overpenetration. I'm going to give you some of my opinion here, and again, it's my opinion. You're free to disagree with it if you want. And you know, I want this podcast, by the way, to be your show as well. So if you've got some ideas on how to make this show better, or some things that you would like to discuss, or you'd like me to discuss, or you want to add to some of the things I've talked about, feel free. Please go to the website handgunworld.com and comment. But I want to talk about this over-penetration because I hear a lot about it. People say, oh, you don't want to carry around, you don't want to make sure you don't have a bullet that's going to go right through the bad guy and hit an innocent bystander. That's true. That's true. We don't want to be hitting innocent bystanders when we're trying to defend ourselves. But let me ask you a question. What happens if you miss? More missing is done than hitting. If you miss your target, where's that bullet going? Is that bullet going to go and possibly hit an innocent bystander? Yes. And if there's more missing that's done, would you agree with me on that? In situations when you're under stress, you're probably going to miss more than you're going to hit your target. Where are those bullets going, the ones that miss? Aren't they just as devastating as the one that overpenetrates? Think about that. So much is made about over-penetration, but nobody talks about what happens if you miss. So the point I'm trying to make, carry a caliber and a bullet that is effective enough that you can shoot well and that you can practice with well. Obviously, you can tell by the way I conduct this podcast, I'm a fan of 9mm. I'm not ruling out 40 or 45 or 38s or 357s. If those work for you, they work for you. But don't get too hung up on the over-penetration, in my opinion. Because if you're worried about getting prosecuted for hitting an innocent bystander due to over-penetration, you're also going to get prosecuted if you miss and hit that innocent bystander. So think about that. And that concludes the Handgun World podcast. This is Bob Main. Why do I carry a gun? Because I can't carry a cop. Thank you for listening. Catch you next time.